You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Cade Young. You're listening to the WFHB local news for Monday, April 8th, 2024. Later in the program, WFHB news correspondent Elise Perry reports on how encampments are impacted by the incoming increase of visitors for the total solar eclipse. More in today's feature report.
When you are able to identify these species, you're like, holy shit, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Join us this year and help us root out invasive species in Bloomington.
City intern Paul Murphy is waging war against a foreign invader. Asian bush honeysuckle is choking out our native flora, and the return of warmer weather means this invasive species is again on the grow. You can help. Find out later in the show on a new episode of Activate. But first, your daily headlines. On April 2nd, the Monroe County Personnel Administration Committee met to discuss the WIS salary recommendations for 12 positions in the Monroe County Assessor's Office. Monroe County Assessor Judith Sharp shared she disagreed with some of the WIS recommendations. However, it is better than the salary rates they currently have.
First of all, I have to thank this committee that has been up here, all of you, including E and the staff, since September that we have been working on this, and it has been a journey. I can't say it was the most fun I've had in this job, but it was a journey. We finally heard from WIS yesterday, and I had a chance to look at everything. I can't say that I'm happy about any of it, but it's better than we were.
Sharp explained that she lost two well-trained staff members because they are able to earn $20,000 more in different positions.
I think you all know that the reason that we started this is I started losing deputies to the auditor's office because for whatever reason, the real estate side of the auditor's office, all but a couple were made Pats. And when you made me Pats, and then my people were still in the comments and even some low comments, the difference between the two offices became almost a $20,000 pay raise or pay increase. And so I lost two people. The first one was one thing. In August, I lost a deputy that had only been with me about 3.5 years, a good deputy, but I couldn't say a word. I mean, bless her heart. Anybody that can make $20,000 more, go. But then the last one really hurt us. It was a deputy that had been in training for over 7 years. And because of personal problems, personal issues at home, everybody can use an extra $20,000. Let's face it, we all would. But I could never hold Charlotte anything but in great respect. I wish her the best. But this really shows an issue that I have in my office. I can't keep losing people.
Sharp said that although the new WIS salaries are better than the current ones, there are still two positions which she said need to be higher, specifically the property director.
And it's not about the person. You know that. It's the mm-hmm. position. So the property director position, which is the most important, because everybody's important, but this job is, Shelley has been with us for 35 years, 27 years, 34, 27 years. And Shelley was a deputy when we had the old township assessors. And then I brought Shelley over to us when we got rid of all the townships. And Shelley has been one of my major, supervisors, and the most important job. She does it all. She is the one that does all of the computer work. Everybody works on the computer, but she She goes all the way down, and she actually writes programming, or helps write programming to the our software developers, because we develop software in this county for these, for our jobs. We were asking this property director to be at least a Pat D. And what I was using the auditor's Pat classifications, and the auditor's property director is a Pat D.
Sharp said that the WIS factor point system is not transparent, and that she thinks the property director in the assessor's office should make the same pay range as the property director in the auditor's office.
That WIS, I think they're just wrong. And this is where I get to the point of the transparency. You all have looked at this. I don't know if you know what all these points mean and how you get to points. We have never, ever, as department heads, been shared that. And since we became a WIS county back in the 90s. So I think it's very, it's not transparent. So I'm asking that the property director be moved to the same as the property director in the auditor's office. They do different things, but their responsibilities, I think, I know that the property director in the auditor's office is a supervisory over the real estate. And Shelley's the same in our office, other than my chief deputy and myself. Shelley is the next in line.
Councilmember Jeff McKim agreed that the two positions Sharp brought up should be classified as professional positions.
Well, first of all, you know, it's interesting, the two positions that you brought up were the two that I noticed that seemed like they were it just didn't make sense that they were classified as comments. So, you know, the property director and the GIS administrator certainly seem like professional positions, and it would be hard to have people to be able to retain people without those kinds of professional classifications in those positions.
McKim suggested that they could increase their hours from 35 hours to 40 hours. Sharp said that she has staff who have to work 2 to 3 jobs.
But the problem is, what's happened over the years, a lot of these people are working 2 and 3 jobs. And I'm not exaggerating that. I have at least 2 people right now that are mothers, and they work here 35 hours, and then they go at night and work 2 other jobs. Now, that's not acceptable. It never has to me. And by doing what we've done, and these aren't my major people, but they're younger people. And, you know, I just think the equity for this positions, because these are professional.
Councilmember Pete Iverson said that the job descriptions before didn't reflect how technical the job positions are. Sharp agreed and said that WIS doesn't understand the job of the assessor's office.
What was really happening was the job descriptions that we had weren't reflecting the technical difficulty that was being done, or the way that technology has influenced way that you're doing the work. And I'm glad to hear you say that you, after reviewing those job descriptions, feel like that is reflecting the work that is actually being done.
I think that's what was so disappointing in the WIS, what WIS came back, because they were nothing like they used to be, and they weren't acknowledged at all. And it was just like, and not to get into the weeds here, but, you know, I know about every county in the state and work with every county. And for whatever reason, I've said this to you and I've said it to everybody else in the state, and we'd all agree, WIS doesn't seem to recognize what we have become as assessors. They don't understand. And they still have us as the poor stepchild of government. And it's very plain. And we can't keep doing that. And I was glad to, and gosh, thank you, Marty, that you took the initiative to go to these other counties, because it's very interesting, the PAT positions, because WIS had never given a PAT to anyone that I knew of. And so I think it validates that we should be looking, because we are a technical, professional technical
absolutely
office.
McKim motioned that they forward the recommendation of job reclassifications to the county council.
So I guess I can make a motion. Let me just first of all say that I am persuaded by the need for more parallelism between the assessor's office and the auditor's office. I think that's a, and I'm disappointed that that wasn't reflected in WISIS recommendations. So I move that we forward to the council the following recommendations. Property director, Pat D. PETABOA administrator, Pat B. GIS assessment administrator, Pat B. Market data analysis administrator, Comet D. Sales disclosure. Pat A on that one. Sorry. Sales disclosure specialist, Comet C.
Yes.
Assistant property director, Comet D. Real estate reassessment specialist, Comet C. Personal property specialist supervisor, Comet D. Floating assessor specialist, Comet C.
The recommendation was approved unanimously. It will be heard by the County Council at their next meeting on April 9th. In today's feature report, WFHB News correspondent Elise Perry reports on how encampments are impacted by the incoming increase of visitors for the total solar eclipse. This news story was recorded on Friday, April 5th, prior to the solar eclipse. For more, we turn to WFHB correspondent Elise Perry.
Imagine if over 5,000 people showed up outside your front door one day to skywatch. That's soon to be the experience of around 40 to 60 unhoused Bloomington residents living in an encampment on the south side of Switchyard Park. The upcoming solar eclipse on April 8th has sparked excitement in Bloomington, with around 300,000 visitors expected to flock to the city to experience 4 minutes of totality. While most of Bloomington is looking forward to the eclipse, local homelessness experts are worried about the effect on the unhoused community. Director Dana Jones of Wheeler Mission said that he is worried about people experiencing homelessness staying safe and supplied throughout the eclipse events. Director Dana Jones of Wheeler Mission said that he is worried about people experiencing homelessness staying safe and supplied throughout the eclipse events, since it is unlikely that all of the unhoused individuals will seek the help of shelters. He said it's important to ensure that they have adequate food and water.
I think more than anything, I'm just concerned about the basic needs of those experiencing homelessness, street homelessness.
With so many extra people in the community, Bloomington is already expecting a gas shortage. Bloomington's subreddit forum has also been full of messages reminding people to stock up on food and bottled water. Jones said that he thinks keeping people experiencing homelessness supplied will be the biggest concern for homelessness resources in the community during the eclipse. To celebrate the eclipse, Bloomington will be hosting a weekend-long event called the Celestial Spectacle at Switchyard Park. The event will feature food, live entertainment, and skywatching. Switchyard Park is located on the Beeline Trail. Walking down the Beeline to the south edge of the park, there is a large unhoused encampment estimated to house around 40 people. The encampment, which consists of structures built with plywood, tarps, tents, and sheet metal, spans both sides of the trail for nearly 30 yards. Jones said that he is hopeful that there won't be negative interactions between the unhoused and eclipse visitors.
You know, as far as interactions go between the unhoused and those that are coming to Bloomington, we're talking about 30 or 40 people, you know, that are experiencing homelessness on the street. You know, that interaction, I have no idea what that will look like, honestly. I hope that we don't have any issues and it doesn't cause any further stigma for those experiencing homelessness.
Julie Ramey, the Community Relations Manager for Bloomington Parks and Recreation, said that the city doesn't know how many people to expect at the Celestial Spectacle, but that Switchyard is able to accommodate around 5,000 people. In anticipation for such a large crowd, the Parks Department is taking precautionary measures of bringing in a water truck and extra restroom facilities.
So we're preparing for the things that we can prepare for. What we can't do is, you know, when there's enough people, or when there's people in the park and the park is full, it's full. We can't make the park bigger.
Unhoused resident Ash has been living in Bloomington for 9 years between different encampments. His current campsite is constructed out of tarps, plywood, and rope. When asked about his concerns for the upcoming eclipse festivities, he just shook his head. Ash said that the unhoused community already faces issues getting resources, and that people are often seen dumping trash around their camps. He seems concerned about the prospect of a large number of people coming to Switchyard and bothering the campers.
It's going to honestly be insanity.
In addition to worrying about being properly prepared for the eclipse, the encampment residents are facing the potential of an eviction. Ash mentioned that security officials told him they would be evicting the camp in early summer.
Apparently, according to the White Shirt Cops, which is the resource officers, it's going to be the homeless community will be out of the park by May 2nd.
The homeless encampment by Switchyard Park primarily sits on land privately owned by the company AutoVest. According to Lindsay Schaefer, an assistant office manager at AutoVest, the company has known about the encampment for a while, and it is, quote, planned to be evicted, end quote. The eviction seems to be unrelated to the eclipse. According to Schaefer, the eviction has been delayed. She didn't provide a reason, but local homelessness experts claim it is likely due to the lengthy process private landowners must go through to legally start eviction proceedings, especially due to the large number of inhabitants on the property. Willie Primer Jr. is an unhoused resident who lives on the south side of the encampment. The 74-year-old Mississippi native has been living there for 2 years with his two dogs. While living there, he has used rocks to landscape around the creek near his tent. Primer has never been affected by an eviction. Consequently, he doesn't think it's possible to remove the entire encampment.
Yeah, they're going to run a lot of them out of here and go. But see, it's too much land, open land, to even worry about that. If they run you out of there, go south. If they run you out of south, go west.
According to Beacon Inc. director Reverend Forrest Gilmore, unhoused residents often lose many of their belongings during evictions. Gilmore shared that campers are notified 72 hours before an eviction through the posting of a no trespassing sign. After 72 hours, the police can arrest those who remain while evictors move forward with cleaning up the area. Following an eviction, unhoused individuals are left to find a new place to live. Gilmore said that while some people choose to find a shelter, most just move elsewhere.
It's a very challenging process. And they usually move to a place that's less visible or less known and try and find, you know, another place to live. Sometimes it can depend, but sometimes they go to smaller campsites and smaller locations, you know, or more hidden away ones, or move to another established camp somewhere else. But occasionally we're able to get a few small number of folks in preparation for that into housing or shelter. But generally speaking, the numbers are fairly low there.
There have already been two encampment evictions since Mayor Kerry Thompson was sworn into office on January 1st. The first encampment eviction was on the southwest side of town on January 5th. According to an article in the B-Square Bulletin, Thompson stated that the city dismantled the camp due to safety and health concerns. These concerns included the absence of adequate sanitation facilities and fires. The second eviction came 2 weeks later on the west side of town. According to local journalist Dave Askins, it came after two unhoused people died at the camp. Both of these encampments were on private land, likely due to city ordinances passed over the past few years. In 2020, Bloomington passed an ordinance restricting overnight camping in public parks. The city followed up on that ordinance in 2023 when they passed another prohibiting setting up camp tents in public parks during daylight hours. The passage of these ordinances has created a situation in which there is no public space for unhoused people to reside, leading them into inhabiting private property. Gilmore said that the habit of banning and evicting unhoused people is not a productive way forward. He said we need to think of a more permanent solution.
The biggest thing is that we are just not providing as a community, a society, enough for incredibly vulnerable people. And for us to even think that camps are what we want is definitely not where we need to be. We need to be thinking far bigger. Camps are incredibly unsafe places for people, you know, just as dismantling a camp can also be incredibly unsafe. So, but we really need to think bigger than how are we protecting people in camps. We need to be thinking about how we're getting people out of camps permanently into safe homes and having better quality of life.
For WFHB News, I'm Elise Perry.
Up next, local journalist Dave Askins of the B-Square Bulletin reads an item from his weekly newsletter for the WFHB Local News. We turn to Askins for more.
The B-Square Bulletin sends out an emailed morning bulletin every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can sign up for the morning bulletin by visiting bsquarebulletin.com and clicking on the tab labeled Subscribe. Here's an item from a recent installment. Election Board Meetings. Late Campaign Finance Filings. Monroe County's Election Board met on Thursday. It was their final meeting before early in-person voting starts on April 9th. A big chunk of time was spent discussing fines for the late filing of CFA-4 forms. That is the report of receipts and expenditures of a political committee. I think it is fair to say that there is some confusion in Monroe County about the way punishments for late filings are meted out. Under state law, it looks like the fine is up to $50 per day that the filing is late, up to a maximum total of $1,000. Part of the oral history of the election division is the 1 year that former Bloomington City Council member Steve Volan had to pay the maximum $1,000 fine. That's despite the fact that Monroe County has had a pretty lenient policy over the years. Monroe County's policy is calibrated to how many past offenses a candidate has committed. A first offense is not fined, but the candidate has to appear in front of the board. Currently, the punishment for a second offense is half the maximum, or $25 per day. Only on a third offense does a candidate have to pay the full fine. Some of the confusion this year stems from the fact that the current policy, which is stricter than the previous one, was enacted a year ago by the election board. Did that reset the number of offenses to zero for each candidate? Or were election division staff supposed to maintain records of past offenses even before that? As near as I can tell, there's nothing in state statute that requires a county to administer the deadlines based on the number of past offenses. I think maintaining records of past offenses is an unnecessary burden to place on election division staff. That record keeping has the sole purpose of softening the financial blow to political candidates who are not organized well enough to meet simple paperwork deadlines. It sounds like the election board is open to revising the fine policy. I think the election board should scrap the idea of calibrating the amount of the fine to the number of past offenses. The board should just administer state code the way it was written. If the election board thinks $1,000 is too high a price to pay, even for missing a deadline by 20 days, then the board should adopt some smaller amount to be applied every time for every candidate. For example, Monroe County's policy could be to fine candidates $25 a day up to a maximum of $500. That would still fit within state statute, relieve election division staff of a record-keeping task, and still provide some meaningful encouragement for candidates to file on time. Until next week, this has been Dave Askins with the B-Square Bulletin for WFHB.
Bloomington is waging war against a foreign invader. Asian bush honeysuckle is choking out our native flora, and the return of warmer weather means this invasive species is once again on the grow. Paul Murphy is an intern on the City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Urban Green Space team, and he's hoping you'll sign up for a weed wrangle to help fight this invasion. Find out how on a new episode of Activate, coming your way right now on the WFHB Local News. Thank you.
Welcome to Activate, featuring real people working for positive change in our community, encouraging you to get involved, live your passion, and make a difference.
Hello, my name is Paul Murphy, and I am a volunteer for the Urban Green Space Department in Bloomington. The Urban Green Space Department in Bloomington is focused on restoring damaged green spaces and establishing new green spaces within Bloomington, with a focus not only on, you know, planting trees and restoring a canopy in general, but making sure we're planting native species. I've worked at Winslow Woods, Southeast Park, Bryan Park, but really I'd say I've spent at least 90% of my time working at Crestmont Park over across the street from Tri North Middle School. Growing up, I've always had an interest in the environmental issues and how much of a change you can make in a city just by doing a very specific work in one area, and how connected all the green space in a city is, and how by repairing one part of that connected loop, you can really reconnect it to the rest of the surrounding green space. To really allow native species to flourish, you need interconnected green space that supports native species. I've learned an immense amount about invasive species, how they work, how they reproduce, and also just being able to identify them. It's like, if you don't know what you're looking for, you know, you're in the dark, you don't even realize they're a problem. But then when you are able to identify these species, you're like, holy shit, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. And you start noticing it wherever you go, and you realize how much of a problem it is, because you know, you see this bunch of honeysuckle somewhere, and that's the only thing growing there. There's nothing else. Honeysuckle is the one I've encountered the most, and it's the one I do the most work on removing. Asian bush honeysuckle, it's from, you know, a very different part of the world. I'd say it's definitely the most prolific invasive species in Bloomington. It grows incredibly quickly, and it grows so densely that nothing else can grow there. No native species can grow there. And also, it doesn't support any native animals. Like, the berries are very sugary and don't have any of the fats that lots of native birds need to feed on. So it doesn't support the surrounding ecosystem in any way. For people who want to get involved, they can sign up for Weed Wrangles, which are a volunteer-based group. You can sign up for different locations, parks around the city, and we meet for 2 hours, and we just work on removing and treating invasive plant species. On the Urban Green Space website, it's a city-run website, and it's very easy to sign up. It's just one click, and I think they send it sends a Google calendar reminder to you as well to remind you of the event. But I mean, it's not something you have to like plan ahead of time to join. There are constantly weed wrangles going on, and the more help, the better. The more help, the more we can remove, and the faster we can restore our city and our parks. To sign up, you can go to the bloomington.in.gov/parks/volunteer. And on that site, you can go down to the button that says click here for Parks and Recreation volunteer opportunities. There's also information on internships and adopting a road program. And once you click on that button, you are presented with a very simple list of upcoming volunteer opportunities and how many spaces are available. Press the button that says click here to sign up. Again, the main address is bloomington.in.gov/parks/volunteer. Thank you again for listening. My name is Paul Murphy. I'm an intern with the Urban Green Space Department in Bloomington. Join us this year and help us root out invasive species in Bloomington.
You've been listening to Activate, true stories from friends and neighbors who stand up for what they believe in. Activate is a partnership between WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build a strong, healthy, and engaged community. With production support from students in the Media School at Indiana University. You can learn more about volunteer opportunities in the WFHB listening area online at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. That's bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org.
Support for the WFHB local news is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. More information online at mpisolarenergy.com.